Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I am Andy Behrens. I am joined today by Dalton Del Don. This is exciting to have Dalton with us for the Tuesday pod. There was a chance that Dalton was going to have jury duty today, but I believe the attorneys looked at his 2021 fantasy rankings and said, no, we question your judgment. We can't have you. Thank you, citizen, for your time. But you are dismissed. So Dalton's here with us. It's great to have you. Hey, buddy.
Hey, great to be here. Andy, as Liz said, there was a good chance I ended up on trial if they even allowed me to come anywhere near that jury. They took one look and did not have me anywhere near that. So I'm glad to be here instead talking some football with you. Hey, we have two new quarterbacks since we last talked, two new franchise quarterbacks, our Bears and 49ers. So exciting times. And we're even in the middle of a dynasty draft. And normally I'd kill you for your picks, but you've actually made some smart ones. So yeah, lots to talk about.
Yeah, we'll probably weave in a little bit of conversation about we're in this Razzball. It's a best ball dynasty. It's not a mock draft. Like, we're going to play this thing out indefinitely, forever, have rookie drafts every year and whatnot. And it's been fun. Like, it's been kind of that first test of my rankings, even though this is a dynasty and that's a little bit different, right? Like, you come out with your first draft of your initial rankings, and then you have to, like, but anyway, for me, maybe it's different for you, but I have to actually get in draft rooms and see what I actually do when the clock is ticking down before I know where I stand on everybody. Like, I go through and I do a bunch of projecting, but you really have to test it against leagues that you care about. So we're both kind of doing that now. And I think I'm on a couple of your players, actually.
Yeah, 100%. I've tinkered with my rankings. I thought I was like, ooh, I'm actually ahead of where I usually am as far as having my rankings ready. But the best way to adjust them is actually put your feet in the fire and do a draft. Yeah, I've definitely tinkered with mine. And it's made me go deeper and looking in because not only Dynasty, but obviously we're 28 rounds. So yeah, it's actually really helped me get really ready for NFL, digging deep here. You swooped me, Trey Sermon, even Clyde Edwards-Helaire in round three. I should have maybe have gone three straight backs. Not really what normal dynasty starts are. And yeah. I know you've actually made some picks that I've been like, who did that? Oh, it's in Barons. Oh, even the Taysom Hill swoop. So some uncharacteristic savvy moves by Barons.
We're gonna talk a little bit about Trey Sermon later. I'm anxious to talk about him because I feel like he's getting a little bit slept on. But before we dive into the ranks, and that's really what we're gonna do today, we're gonna talk about sort of the first iteration of our 2021 fantasy rankings. Before we do that, we have a handful of news and notes that we got to get to, and I feel. I'm a little torn about this because I don't totally feel like he's fantasy relevant. And yet I also feel obligated to mention Tim Tebow because he is currently controlling the news cycle, right, in across sports platforms. He's going to get a look in Jacksonville. It's a one-year deal. Nothing guaranteed, obviously. The guy's 33 years old. He's going to be 34 when the season starts, I believe. He has been away from football for years. He was briefly a farm system Met. Messed around with baseball. Now he is trying to transition, not just transition to a new position, but he is transitioning to a position that has a huge learning curve in the NFL for people who've already played 4 years at tight end in college, right? Like, this is not a simple position to transition to, but he's gonna try to do it in a summer. So I have a lot of respect for him, actually, for, you know, not abandoning his ambition to play relevant football in the NFL. I think it's great. I think it's kind of a fun story and also kind of a terrible story. What do you think the chances are that, number one, that he actually makes this roster, and then number two, that maybe Urban Meyer actually legitimately tries to turn him into some sort of gadgety thing, whether it's a, you know, sub package guy near the goal line? Are we going to see him vulturing touchdowns from fantasy relevant players? Like, I don't know. How are you feeling about this?
I don't see any fantasy relevance here. I guess there's a 5% chance he makes the team, but I doubt he makes any impact if he takes it a step further. He hasn't played in so long. You mentioned the tough position to transition to. I guess the depth chart is pretty wide open, but obviously they have a lot of, I don't know. Tim Tebow, he's Tim Tebow. That's why we're talking about it. But let's move on quickly because there's no fantasy relevance here. I'd rather talk about Tom Brady turning his Twitter profile into laser eyes because he's into Bitcoin personally. That's what I'd rather talk about than Tebow. But anyway, Tim Tebow, it dominates the news cycle. So, okay, him joining Urban Meyer, it's pretty funny and whatnot. But no, this is not going to help your fantasy teams.
Did Brady really do that? I haven't even seen that yet.
He did. Yeah, no. Russell Okung said that he called him the tipping point. Tom Brady's official. Go to his Twitter profile right now. He has laser eyes.
Oh, man.
It's happening.
That feels like it's kind of a jump the shark moment, actually, for crypto.
It's not the top.
Tom trying to seem like a young person. Hello, fellow young people. I feel like the only fantasy relevance to Tebow is actually what he might take away from other players. Like, I do think there's at least a, I don't know, 5-10% possibility that they deliberately want to use him in some sort of, you know, I don't know, Taysom Hill light sort of version. I will say this, he will be a very difficult player to cut if he's still hanging around into August, because not only is he a Florida legend, he is an absolute Jacksonville legend. Like, that's where he sort of hit the national scene as a prep prospect. Absolutely legendary high school player in Jacksonville. So it's just a tough place to cut him if you're eventually going to cut him. Like, in my mind, you either have to say, no, thank you. We're interested in you as an advisor, but you can't make this roster, or like, you have to do it now because it's going to be really hard to do it in August.
Real quickly, I will say Carson Wentz taking over Indy. Tennessee, I think, is going in the wrong division. I have my eyes on Jacksonville at +700 to win this division. I know Urban Meyer might turn into be a total donkey and draft the running back right away, but there's some interesting pieces here, and all Trevor Lawrence does is win. I think at +700, of all the long shots in the division, my eyes are right on Jacksonville. A little bit Atlanta too, but I like Jacksonville.
You really just got to get to nine. You get to nine wins, and that's a fun bet, right? Like, if they're just playing 500 football for much of the season, you get into November and you've got something to root for. That's a good call. That's a really, really good call. Another thing I want to mention really quickly, I just want to know, like, did you see DK Metcalf's 100-meter race?
Yeah, let me talk about Bitcoin. I got to let you talk about track. I mean, this is right up your scene here. So go ahead, Andy, talk about it. It's pretty cool, right? I mean, a lot of athletes claim they can run the 100 like this, or to claim their Olympian speed, but pretty cool to actually see DK Metcalf try it.
Yeah, so that's where I was going to go. And I have all the respect in the world for DK Metcalf for doing this, because we hear this every single year from an NFL player. It was Adrian Peterson back in the day. And Peterson is obviously, he's a fast human being. He never ran the kind of like high school track times that would make you nationally relevant. But like, Adrian Peterson used to say he could make the Olympics. And obviously Tyreek Hill thinks about it every now and then. And Tyreek Hill was like a legit sprinter at the like junior college level, high school level. Like, he was a nationally relevant high school sprinter, so he can talk, but almost none of these guys can talk. Like, when Mecole Hardman says that he's one of the fastest guys out, like, no, like, you're not. But DK Metcalf actually put himself in a race with like Olympic hopefuls. The heat that he was in was not our, like, you know, cream of the crop guys who were definitely going to the Olympics. It wasn't Noah Lyles, it wasn't Trayvon Bromell, it wasn't guys like that, it wasn't like Olympic favorites, but it was pro runners. And he didn't get walked or anything. It's not like he embarrassed himself. Like, he was ninth in his heat, but he was in the camera frame when everybody finished, and he started great, which is the crazy thing for somebody who's like 6'4 and 230 pounds. Like, you would have thought that he would just not get out of the blocks really well. He did. Spring is highly technical. He clearly worked at it. Like, he's invested himself in this since like January. So I just, like, tip of the cap to him. I have all the respect in the world for this. I will also tell you, I don't think that there's, maybe Hill could do it. I don't think there's any other NFL players right now who could just walk on a track and go 10-3-5, 10-3-6.
And while I imagine he trained some, as you mentioned, obviously he's mostly training for football. So like, this is really incredible. If he just concentrated all of it on just sprinting, imagine he'd be even closer. You know, obviously he's working on his upper body and other strength in areas that probably sprinters ignore. So pretty impressive that he can, you know, he's going to be suiting up for the Seahawks in a couple of weeks, and him to come, as you said, within frame.
Yeah, I will say that I saw a few people on Twitter suggest that, oh, if he were to just drop 30 or 40 pounds, that he would be a serious Olympic medal threat. And like, I just want to say that it's not the same.
That's not how it works
for DK Metcalf to just drop 30 or 40 pounds. Like, a normal human being, people that you interact with day to day, yeah, maybe they have 20 pounds, 30 pounds they can lose. But DK Metcalf is he's a pretty well-conditioned athlete, right? Like, he doesn't have a lot of spare weight. He's also like 6'4". So it's just not that easy at that size to get down to like 190 and do it efficiently and, you know, no problem whatsoever, a few months and all of a sudden you're ready to break 10. Anyway, ton of respect for him for doing it. I don't think there's, in my opinion, there's probably not anybody else in the league right now that can step onto a track and go 10-3 anything. That was super impressive. Love that he did it. Final order of business that I think we have to talk about before we get into the ranks. And I'm really only talking about this because I saw some other fantasy analysts tweet about it. Kerryon Johnson. He was waived by a team that is going nowhere and is rebuilding and is pretty terrible, right? Like Kerryon Johnson waived by Detroit, claimed by the Eagles. And then we had a bunch of fantasy guys weighing in about how this is scary in some way for Miles Sanders. I just don't think so. I didn't adjust any ranks off of the Kerryon Johnson news because this guy hasn't been good for 2 years. He's had knee issues. He's had some significant injuries. He's basically been a 3.5 yard per carry runner for 2 seasons. And last year he was just getting outproduced by everybody else who got carries for the Lions. So I don't know. This didn't do anything for me. Did it do anything for you?
Kerryon Johnson showed up after that knee surgery with a big old brace last year. So I'm curious if he shows up with that again. But if it's the same runner he was last year, this is a zero burger. But maybe I'm not as bullish on Miles Sanders as you are, though, because of the drafting of Kenneth Gainwell. They did sign Jordan Howard. And now they have a quarterback that may not throw to his running back as much, but he also might open up the yards per carry. And Sanders had that 80-yard touchdown run once Hurts took over. And I get the upside, but I do worry about his durability. I have him as my running back 18, Sanders. His ECR right now is running back 14. So it looks like I'm down on him. It sounds like you're a little bit more into him. Yeah.
I'm actually not. You know, I think I've got him outside my top 15. I'm not, I don't feel super bullish on him. I just didn't consider Gainwell in particular.
The Kerryon Johnson, yeah.
Yeah, Kerryon's not doing anything for me. I certainly think that's competition for like Jordan Howard and Boston Scott, but I don't think Miles Sanders is sweating Kerryon Johnson. I don't think there's a single thing that Kerryon Johnson does as well as Miles Sanders. So I wouldn't be particularly worried about that. I know that Kerryon was a relatively high draft pick back in the day, but the Eagles got him off waivers, right? Like that's not the Eagles' problem. They didn't draft him anywhere. So I don't think they're particularly invested in him. Gainwell, I feel like I've talked about a couple times. This is another Memphis running back that fantasy Twitter is excited about. I mean, it has, sometimes they pop, sometimes they don't. Caught a lot of passes. He can do that. I don't think he can run between the tackles. I didn't consider him like any sort of wow runner from what I've seen of Gainwell. We'll see. He's another guy that I don't think does anything as well as Miles Sanders, but we'll see. He could be a factor. I thought this was a pretty good offseason for Sanders, all things considered, only because there was so much reporting that suggested they might be in on a day two running back and they didn't take one.
Yeah, I agree with you totally about Kerryon Johnson. It's not much of a big deal whatsoever. I still, though, think there's enough competition with Scott and maybe Howard's goal line, and the fact that they have a quarterback who could both take away the goal line rushing touchdowns, or a lot of them, and is not going to throw it to him a lot, Those are concerns when you also add in his durability pass. So that's why I'm just a little down on Sanders, certainly not because of the addition of Kerryon Johnson.
Where are you at on DeAndre Swift?
Unfortunately, also a little below market on him. I love the player. Man, he just looks like a monster. Could easily be a top five fantasy back, no question. And Detroit is going to try to break the kneecaps and going to run the football. But they added Jamal Williams, and this is going to be a bad, bad team. One of the worst offenses with Jared Goff and no receivers and a bad system and an archaic mindset.
Don't you disrespect TJ like Hockenson that way.
Yeah, no, I love Hawkins. Oh, yeah, he's going to get all the targets. Love him. Another great, yeah, nice pick of you in the Dynasty one. I was definitely my eye on him the round before. But yeah, it just looks like Swift is probably going to be drafted ahead of when I'm willing to, just because of his situation. Certainly not the player. He passed the eye test, looks like a stud. I mean, he's a star in real life, but hate his situation around him. And also another guy I worry about, you know, durability. What about you?
Yeah, it's the team context that really gets him for me. It's so hard to have the sort, like, think about the season that James Robinson had for Jacksonville last. It's just really hard to do. It's just really hard to be like an upper tier fantasy running back on an absolutely miserable go nowhere team, right? And it certainly looks like that's what Detroit is going to be. They got a couple of names, but it's a terrible receiving core. They had holes absolutely everywhere that they've partially addressed through the draft, right? Like, they're doing some things. I could find reasons to be excited long term if I were a Lions fan, but I don't think this is going to be any kind of season for them. And it's just really, really difficult for any running back to carve out significant fantasy value given that sort of team context, like a team that might legitimately win one game, two games, four games, something like that. And that's what he's facing. He's a super capable receiver. We like that. You know, it makes him a little bit impervious to game flow. So that's good. But I've got him 15 among the running backs right now as a just a pure player. I like him a little bit better than that, but I don't think I can pull the trigger on him much higher.
I do think Jamal Williams is a thing and is a pass catcher. He proved it. He worked hard during the offseason before last, and it showed last year. I think he really could cut into work a little bit more than people expect as well. So speaking of better team context, I have Clyde Edwards-Helaire one spot ahead of Swift the more I thought about it. Man, he did not impress as a rookie on the field. But his team, he also suffers some of the same problems with having a dual threat quarterback. But the Chiefs are going to score so many more points. And I still, Damian Williams did not return. So what do you think about CEH versus Swift?
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Rasball draft earlier. I took CEH, and he's a good example of someone where, when you look at the year-end numbers, if we hadn't drafted him in the first round, like if it weren't for the fact that he was going with like the seventh overall pick or whatever it was, by the time we actually hit the start of September, if we'd been drafting him where we were drafting even Swift, I think people would feel a whole lot differently about him. I think we'd like him because he came in at what, like 4.5 yards per carry last season. It's not like he was inefficient. It's not like he was, 3.8, 3.9 yards per carry or anything like that. He can clearly catch the ball. His one major problem, and it happened to hit during some national TV games because the Chiefs are always in spotlight games, goal line carries, right? Like he got opportunities inside the 10 and he didn't convert them. I can't remember one where I thought to myself, oh wow, almost everybody scores there. How did he get dragged down? Like I didn't consider it a huge negative. The Chiefs may consider it a negative, but he's still in my view, he's still somebody who's going to get 65-70% of the backfield touches for a team that can score whatever number it needs to get to, right? Like the Chiefs are going to average between 30 and 35 points per game. And he's basically the feature back for that team. Williams is behind him. They add Jerick McKinnon, who no team is going to give Jerick McKinnon more than like 6 touches a game. So I just don't see any threats there to him. And he was like, again, the underlying numbers just weren't that bad.
Don't have a short-term memory. Before the last 2 years, Andy Reid was like money for his RB1 in fantasy. And yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, Damian Williams did not come back. Of Jerick McKinnon's toast. Man, Damian Williams put up really good numbers when he was a feature back down the stretch before the season before last. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I know that he gets the May nickname now, but CEH was such a good receiver at LSU. I don't know why that didn't translate as a rookie, but the Chiefs rebuilt their offensive line during the offseason. The more I talk about this, and I really think that drafters are going to be down on him, it looks like, in early ADP, or at least comparatively. So, yeah, man, he looks like an intriguing buy for me.
Yeah, I feel like we've let him slide down to the range where we wish we'd drafted him last year instead of, all of us sort of collectively talking ourselves into him as a first rounder. And yeah, that didn't work out. But the opportunity there is just so great. You mentioned what Damian Williams did at the end of the season just a couple of years ago. He was also doing that on just like 14 or 15 touches a game. That wasn't even a huge workload. He was scoring twice a game. And carrying fantasy teams in the most important weeks of the season. And he wasn't even getting what we would consider like a workhorse sort of workload week in and week out. So if CEH gets even a little bit more than that, I mean, there's a lot of room for profit here.
Yeah, I'm regretting not taking him in the early third in that dynasty. You got him late third, too. I mean, oh, so funny. I almost took Cam Akers in the early first, and he falls all the way at the end of the first for you. And then I almost took CEH in the early third, and he falls all the way to the back end of the third for you. I don't know. The rest of the league's asleep at the wheel, if you ask me.
Let's roll right into the rankings, because you had some spicy stuff in there. Like, your ranks are always fun. You do. I don't mean this. This may sound like a backhanded compliment. I don't mean it that way, because I truly admired that the way that Brad Evans has always ranked players is like, if he has a strong feeling about a guy, you are gonna know it from looking at his ranks, right? Like Brad always had that thing where, like, if I don't like Adrian Peterson in a given week, I'm gonna make him RB45 or something like that. Some place where he would never finish. Like, he just simple declarative, like you just knew where he stood from his ranks. And man, you are taking some stands in your first draft of the seasonal ranks. I loved it. So we're gonna dive into that a little bit. Just so people know, we of course our general rankings that we publish to the site are based on Yahoo default settings, 1 QB leagues, 12 teams, half PPR, blah blah blah, stuff like that. So they're basically their half PPR rankings. And also, none of these things are like chiseled into stone tablets. Okay, this is the first draft of our ranks that we just hit the street with like a week ago. So we're going to mess with them. Like, things are going to happen in the off season. Guys are going to get hurt. guys are going to get suspended. There's still a few veterans out there that need to get added to rosters, and like ranks are going to change. Things are going to happen. So this is the first batch of ranks that we've produced. And you've got some fun stuff in there. We'll start with just the consensus top 12. This is the, you know, combine them all, put them all in one big stew, me, Harmon, Liz, Pianowski, Dalton, all the ranks together. This is our consensus top 12. And I have some disagreement with this, but anyway, this is where we are. Number one, McCaffrey. Number two is Dalvin Cook. Number three is Derrick Henry. Number four is Saquon. Number five is Jonathan Taylor. We'll talk about him in a second. Number six is Kamara. Number seven is Zeke Elliott. I don't have him there. I don't have him as a first round player. Number eight is Nick Chubb. Number nine, Tyreek Hill. Then Stephon Diggs. Then Aaron Jones. Then Davante Adams. We are going to get into the Packers skill players in a little bit because they face some headwinds at the moment. I just like, as I look at that first round, I guess I would argue pretty strenuously that Travis Kelce ought to be in there somewhere. I've got him in my top 10. I'm a little surprised that the player who last year offered the greatest positional edge is not in anybody else's first round. But anyway, I'm on an island there. Again, we'll talk about Adams a little bit more, but why don't we start it with you and Jonathan Taylor? Because I feel like when I rank a guy number two, you pretty much know that I was tempted to make him number one. So like, were you not tempted to make Jonathan Taylor your number one? You have him number two right now. We all have Christian McCaffrey as number one overall, but I know you love Jonathan Taylor. You loved him going into his rookie season. And then obviously he finished with an incredible second half. So talk to us about Jonathan Taylor, your number two overall ranked player.
A couple things. So I rank as if how I would draft. Maybe it's just a laziness factor, but I literally just want to go off my own sheet. So I'm just putting it how I would personally draft. And that's the way it is. Sometimes there are major outliers. I do like to look at the market. And if I'm way off, sometimes I will just correct halfway. And I should have done that more last year. Sometimes this results in me finishing with good rankings, and then this year it's going to be a disaster. Last year I was, you know, really down on Allen and Brady, and the fantasy pros are going to kill my accuracy score. Is going to look really bad being an outlier. I was off last year. But I will say some of these ranks we go over, I'll be, I'll have strong conviction, a hot take. Others I'll be like, it's one tier. Ranking in tiers is usually more helpful. But Jonathan Taylor specifically, no, I think McCaffrey's the clear number one, especially in PPR. We're talking half PPR even then still. I think McCaffrey really is. I know coming off, maybe this is the new normal in injuries and all that, but I think with his resume and based on all these question marks afterward, I think McCaffrey's the clear number one. And then Taylor, for me, number two, obviously Marlon Mack is what people are going to say, but Marlon Mack is an okay back before he tore his Achilles. And Jonathan Taylor, everyone used to point to Le'Veon Bell that could show that running backs can improve in the NFL, but that was in between off seasons. Man, Jonathan Taylor did not look great the first month last year when he immediately became the starter. You know, I was like all excited because I was in on Taylor and Mac immediately got that opportunity, but he really came on down the stretch. I don't need to bore you with the numbers, but he averaged, 120 yards over the final seven games and a touchdown per game. Their offensive line, yes, they lost Costanzo, the left tackle, but you look at his run blocking grade, very, very poor. They upgraded with Eric Fisher at left tackle as far as run blocking. They have other good lines there. Carson Wentz, he'll still dump the ball. Hines is there, and I get that. But man, Taylor, he's a monster. He would have been a top five pick in the NFL draft if NFL teams treated running back position as they did in the past. I mean, you look at his workout metrics through the roof. He's the real deal. I think he's going to get more targets. I'm all in on Taylor. I love the fact, you have to face the Titans and Houston and Jacksonville. That is a division that looks very favorable against opposing defenses. So, yeah, Taylor's my number two with confidence. I mean, Dalvin Cook, if you said they're both going to play 16 games, fine, give me Cook. But I think you have to project him, like my guy George Kittle, you have to project 2 to 3 missed games. So that's why I have him three behind Taylor.
Yeah, the point I always like to make with Taylor, and it actually holds up for several other Wisconsin running backs, right, is just because a player doesn't get a chance to show that he possesses a trait at the college level doesn't mean that he doesn't have it coming into the NFL, right? Like Jonathan Taylor was a comfortable receiver almost right away, right? Like they were throwing to him right away and had a pretty significant receiving workload, I want to say from week one. That was never a worry as a rookie. And it was a major concern, like as he came into the league, right? It just happens sometimes. Not everybody is Sean Green. Not everybody comes into the league having never caught a pass and then continues to not catch passes. Some people just weren't asked to do it at the college level. And that turned out to be the case with Taylor. So I like it.
Oh, he caught 36 of 39 targets he secured. And all the underline sets, the yards per route run, were actually really good at Wisconsin. So yeah, they didn't feature him, but he can succeed when given the opportunity. So yeah, I'm all in on Taylor, man. He looks so good. He passes the eye test. What is the argument? Just the fact that the lack of track record, I guess. That'll be a theme here, like you see with Akers. I want the guys coming up. Whereas, I mean, what was the stat that no one's age 26 or older has been finished as a top 10 fantasy back the last 3 years or something? I mean, it's crazy. It's becoming even more and more of a young man's game.
Yeah, it's position. Not so much the I would say that it's not so much the lack of history with Jonathan Taylor as the immaculate history with Derrick Henry. Right, he's coming off two straight rushing titles, a 2,000 yard season. No, he doesn't catch the ball, but catching the ball is just, I don't know. It's kind of a little flourish. It's almost a luxury if you're going to score 16 to 20 touchdowns a year. So like Henry not only has the track record, but he's the absolute, I mean, everything that they do in Tennessee is hinges on Derrick Henry's performance. All he's got to do is stay healthy and Derrick Henry's going to fall into 1400, 1500 yards. So that's what you're up against. Like if you're ranking Jonathan Taylor over I get it with Dalvin Cook. I can understand some level of injury concern. For me, even without much of a receiving workload, like I just need Derrick Henry to do normal Derrick Henry things, and he's getting 1,500 yards and 16 touchdowns. And so then that becomes the bar that Jonathan Taylor has to clear.
Yeah, I just feel ever so slightly more comfortable the younger player with the fresher legs than, like I said, he'd be the first running back in the past 3 years starting at age 27 season to finish top 10. But I love Henry. There's no argument here. I mean, the few guys I got right last year, I had him above market. But coming off 400 carries, I mean, it's just, he dealt with the hamstring injury the year before. But I absolutely love Derrick Henry. He's a beast. He's one of the most valuable non-quarterback offensive players in the league, for sure. No argument if you wanted Henry above Taylor. That's for sure.
Okay, let's talk about Cam Akers, who you have number 5 overall. I just took him in this Razzball Dynasty draft. I like him, but I'll tell you in a second where I'm conflicted with Cam Akers. I mean, I really like him. I like the opportunity. Obviously, we like the offense. You've got him in front of Zeke. You've got him in front of Saquon Barkley, in front of Nick Chubb, in front of Alvin Kamara. For me, he's my running back 8 overall. I think I'm picking like 10th in that Razzball league. So that's why he fell to me, and I was comfortable taking him. If I have a concern, it's that his underlying numbers look almost exactly like Daryl Henderson's. There was not a lot that separated him in terms of actual production last year from the guy who was theoretically his understudy, right? Like it was clearly Cam Akers' job by the end of the year. And the most important games of the season for the Rams, it was Cam Akers and Cam Akers alone. And I will also say that the most impressive game that I thought he played in the postseason. And like, we tend to forget those things, right? Like they don't show up in the seasonal fantasy stats and then poof, they just go away and we don't care about him. But he carried that team against Seattle. It was a signature game, I thought, for him. He was absolutely fantastic. He had some other big rushing games earlier in the year, like in December, but I didn't think he had to work very hard to get him. Like he'd have these breakaway runs where he wasn't touched until he was 60 yards downfield. And then the first guy to touch him tackled him. And I wasn't actually like, he had some games where like all of Twitter was blowing up about him. And I just visually was not that impressed. Like they were games that I thought almost any other starting caliber running back could have got the same yards. And then he really wowed me in the Seattle game in the playoffs. And that changed my mind a little bit. But is any part of you concerned about Daryl Henderson, who again averaged more yards per carry and was essentially the same dude last year?
That Seattle game came with a banged up Goff. Everyone knew Akers was getting the ball every carry, and he still ran for 130 yards in Seattle. Very impressed. I think he was banged up as well. Yeah, Daryl Henderson was PFF's highest graded rusher through 3 weeks last year. But I'm just listening to McVay, who I believe traded up for Akers. He's just called him a special back, an every down back. He clearly treated him as such down the stretch. I'd like to see more targets. And I get it's a bit of a risk where I have him ranked since he's never done it for a full season. But I would argue all the guys right below him, Elliott, Barkley, Nick Chubb, they all have either their durability or workload concerns as well. So yeah. I'm just thinking here, Sean McVay feature back, even when Gurley was on one banged up knee, who, by the way, is basically out of the league already. One banged up knee was leading the league in touchdowns still in this system. And that was with Goff. Now we have Matthew Stafford, just a massive upgrade. So, and the best defense in the league, maybe. So I just love this setup. Feature back in McVay's system with all these weapons and now Stafford. I mean, I think Akers, yeah, that's my theory here. But again, you haven't seen him do it a full season, but I love the setup. And yeah, he really, really looked strong down the stretch last year. The fresh legs guy again.
It's hard for me to sweat the full season thing, and we haven't seen him do it over a protracted period of time, because man, we saw him do it all December and then in two huge spots in the postseason where, as you say, everybody knew where the ball was going because Jared Goff was banged up, right? Like he was great against Green Bay in the playoffs, but that was Green Bay and everybody put up numbers against Green Bay. But that, I thought that Seattle game was really special, and I thought he really forced some impressive missed tackles in that game that made me think, wow, okay, here is finally a game that Cam Akers is giving us that I don't think just anybody in the league could give us. I thought he was genuinely special in that one. So he's a top 10 running back for me. I have a little bit of Daryl Henderson concern, but that's about the end of it. Let's talk one more running back here at the top. And that's Antonio Gibson, who, like, I feel like you and I are actually on an island with Antonio Gibson, because I am pretty high too. He's number 12 for me. He's number 11 for you overall. Nobody else has him higher than 18 in the overall ranks, right? But I'm looking at Antonio Gibson at the end of the first round and the start of the second round. Like, that's where I'm totally comfortable taking him. We haven't talked about this a lot when we talk about draft winners. I thought he was a pretty big draft winner. There was a little bit of buzz that Washington could do something at running back, give him maybe it would just be an upgrade for the JD McKissick part of that platoon arrangement, but that didn't happen, right? Like they seem fully intent on rolling with Antonio Gibson, perhaps in a bigger role this year. He was phenomenal last season. And again, there's no one really threatening him. So you landed him in the late in the second round of that Razzball draft. And I was pissed because I thought about him. I'm picking like 10th in that thing, which means that I had like the 10th pick and the 15th pick. And I thought about him hard at 15, and I was kind of regretting not taking him. And then you scooped him up. I like him a lot.
Yeah, there are not too many 22, 23-year-olds with the setup. I would, in a dynasty, I'd prefer a younger quarterback tied to Washington. But man, everything else you love, especially with Fitzpatrick, with Samuel joining McLaurin, who played on two high ankle sprains last year. If it's not the Rams, then it might be Washington who have the league's best defense. So I similarly like the setup here. McKissick, I would prefer him gone, but Gibson was the receiving he did at Memphis. You'd think there's more upside for him to be more involved as a receiver at the NFL level. So yeah, I guess, you don't want to bank on touchdowns repeating, but it was nice to see him so strong down there. And yeah, Memphis back that certainly passed the eye test. Love his setup. And I moved him ahead of Aaron Jones, which may seem crazy, but I really worry about Aaron Rodgers, which we'll talk about later. And who are the other backs? I'm sure Harmon will feel strong about Eckler over him, but I think all these guys after him have equal or more question marks. I mean, Antonio Gibson, as a rookie, had barely had any carries in college, just had 11 touchdowns rushing. So I'm in.
Yeah, that was by far the most impressive thing. Is we talked about learning positions earlier with Tim Tebow. Like, Antonio Gibson was absolutely new to the running back position, like absolutely new at the NFL level as a rookie, when you would expect everything is moving a little bit faster than anything he's ever seen before. And he thrived. He was great. I expect him to have a huge goal to go role all season long. The idea of Antonio Gibson repeating with double digit touchdowns is not, like, that seems about right to me. I've got him projected for double digit touchdowns. Like, I think that's definitely happening. I think he was a draft winner. I think the offseason is going well for him so far. We'll see how it carries into the regular season. You mentioned Aaron Jones, and I'm with you. Like, I've got Gibson ahead of Aaron Jones right now. So let's just talk about the Packers problem, and we'll kind of pin it to Jones and Davante Adams, I guess. So Davante right now, his consensus overall rank is 12. He's the consensus wide receiver 3 at Yahoo. I don't have him there. I've got him 22. You've got him 19. Like, obviously this is all dependent on Aaron Rodgers. And I understand if somebody just wants to rank the entire player pool as if there's no question with Aaron Rodgers, and let's just pretend that Aaron Rodgers is definitely, for sure, no doubt about it, the Green Bay Packers quarterback. I don't know how you can say that there's no level of uncertainty there, though, is the thing, right? Like, he's pretty open about not wanting to be with the team, floating the idea of potentially sitting out. Obviously, you know, investigated the possibility of landing in San Francisco. Denver's interested. He's interested in Denver. That would be a great fit. Like, I don't know. Like, just talk about your approach with your rankings with respect to all the Packers skill players, knowing the Rodgers problem.
Yeah, I'm treating it like it's a real threat that Rodgers moves. He just seems like a stubborn player. It seems like he's contacted potential free agents and said that I'm not returning. All this smoke. I think there's fire with him, and I think Denver makes so much sense. You wait to June 1st, and I think it helps the cap situation. They could offer two firsts, you know, one of those receivers and Drew Lock, and it just makes total sense. That the fact that Broncos passed on Justin Fields at the draft really opened my eyes there. So maybe I'm being selfish because I laid a little money on the Broncos at 50-1 when I thought Deshaun Watson was going to get traded there. So now suddenly I'm like, ooh, Aaron Rodgers. I really do think, man, maybe I'm off here, but I certainly think there's enough of a possibility here. If I were in a draft tonight, I would bump Davante Adams down a little. I mean, he would be by far the number one with Rodgers. He led the world in yards per route run last year, all the targets and whatnot. But the drop to Jordan Love would be absolutely drastic. There's no way you could take him. You could take him above Diggs, Hill, or I'd even argue A.J. Brown or Justin Jefferson with Jordan Love throwing him the football. So, I mean, yeah, and obviously it would hurt Aaron Jones as well. So I'm not sure what you could really do as far as Denver. If you're in a best ball or something, maybe you try to load up in the back half and maybe bump up your guy, Javonte Williams. But, man, I think there's a real, real threat that Aaron Rodgers is moved this offseason.
Yeah, I'll tell you my wide receiver ranks right now. I've got Hill first, I've got Diggs, I've got Hopkins, we'll talk about him later. I've got Justin Jefferson, AJ Brown, and DK Metcalf all ahead of Davante Adams. I think I approach this fundamentally the same way that you do, which is to say that, like, my ranks at any given moment reflect the way I think I would draft tonight. And I just, like, how can I be so obviously, if we knew that Aaron Rodgers was totally happy and was going to be a Green Bay Packer, I would again have Adams probably atop my wide receiver ranks. He's a touchdown machine. They have just a mind meld together, right? They're obviously a wonderful combination of receiver and quarterback, but there's enough uncertainty for me. Is it 50-50? Is it 60-40? I don't know. There's enough uncertainty for me that I have to draft him at a place where I'd be comfortable if someone other than Aaron Rodgers is throwing him the football, and I just can't have him in my top five.
Yeah, no, Rodgers is—he's different, man. And Brett Favre, he says that I'd be surprised if he returns at this point. So I don't know. It's tough to believe. You know, Schefter was so certain my Niners were drafting Mac Jones, but honestly, I wouldn't just take this. You know, I mean, you had a great tweet too. It's pretty funny that his threat is I might host a game show. But Rodgers does have these options, and he is stubborn, and he might retire. I don't think that retirement is totally out the window. I mean, I think that is another option too. So I don't know. It's interesting what's happening there. It's obviously the story of the offseason, but if I had to place my money, I'd say I think he gets traded to the Broncos.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I'm beginning to treat Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, Jerry Jeudy, and Noah Fant as if there's a non-trivial chance that Aaron Rodgers is going to be their quarterback, right? Like, we have to think about bumping all those guys to a certain extent if you're drafting best ball right now.
Hey, I drafted KJ Hamler and Jordan Love in our dynasty. They're really late.
I saw the Jordan Love pick.
But yeah.
I respect it.
And Hamler
it.
Too. Rodgers is going to be feeding Hamler.
Let's talk DeAndre Hopkins, because you have ranked him in a spot where you will absolutely never get him. Like, if this is legitimately how you feel going into drafts, there's just no chance that you're ever going to land DeAndre Hopkins. I'm sure it hasn't happened yet. He's my wide receiver three. He just had 160 target season, caught 115 balls, over 1,400 yards. A little light in terms of touchdowns for all that volume, but still, 115 catches is a year. And that's basically what he does year in and year out. It was his first year in the system, just met his quarterback, and goes and puts up 1,400 yards. So that's quite a year. You have him at wide receiver eight, which isn't, I'm not going to say that's disrespectful. That's a top 10 receiver. That's a wide receiver one for fantasy purposes, but you've got him number 27 overall, which basically means you're never landing him. So I don't know. Talk expectations for DeAndre Hopkins was last year. Do you think that represents like his ceiling and he's just not going to get any better than what he just did?
Hopkins is fine, and this is just a tier thing, and maybe Kyler Murray's second half was just that shoulder injury, but 6.6 YPA, the touchdown's definitely light, and this guy now approaching 30, and all the other guys, I mean, I guess my main argument is less anti-Hopkins than it is Diggs, Tyreek Hill, AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson, and DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
I would all unequivocally rather I have on my team. Maybe McLaurin is a bit of a reach, fine. But those six, I would happily bet any amount of money anyone wants a one-on-one bet with Hopkins versus any of those. They're all younger and in is as good as systems, in my opinion. I mean, you're going to take Hopkins over AJ Brown? I mean, without what they've lost Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith and a bad defense, and what if Henry gets hurt? And look at what he did with two knee surgeries in the offseason. I mean, I don't think it's that crazy. I mean, after what Justin Jefferson did as a rookie, or we're talking Tyreek Hill or Stephon Diggs, I don't know. I just don't think it's that crazy to have him below those six guys.
Yeah, Brown is one of those names, one of those few players that I could actually right now comfortably project. And this is almost crazy to say, because our problem with AJ Brown is that he has not seen targets, right? Our problem with AJ Brown is that all the good things he does off of like six targets a day every week, right? Like he still hasn't had a monster target season. Right now, just looking at that team, if they're going to even throw the ball 400 times, he's going to see 180 of those. Like there's just nowhere else to go. So AJ Brown is somebody that I could comfortably project for at least as many targets as DeAndre Hopkins. And there just aren't that many guys out there like it. That could change if Tennessee decides they want to get in on Julio Jones or something like that. But there's not very many ways to add relevant receivers at this point. I guess the Jets could do something with Jamison Crowder, but there's just not that many names that are going to change teams.
I get the targets mean everything. I totally do. But I mean, DK Metcalf last year, 1,300 yards, 10 touchdowns. I mean, Hopkins, 1,400 yards, 6 touchdowns. Metcalf was in year 2 in the NFL. I mean, we just saw him sprint, as you just said. I mean, how do you not project him, to move a step forward, whereas Hopkins is like, more so in the a receiver approaching age 30. And I don't know, is Kyler Murray a star? Is he even good? I don't know yet. I don't know that, but I don't know. That's my thought process on, I do not hate DeAndre Hopkins. He's fine. My wide receiver seven-ish, a part of that tier, but yeah, I'm just going after the younger guys.
Well, let's talk about another younger guy here then. And this is a player where, again, I feel like you and I are kind of on an island with a guy, and this is going to be Najee Harris. Far and away for me, I published some rookie dynasty rankings a week ago, and Najee Harris to me is the clear number one. He is also for me a top 12 fantasy running back. I've got him 12 overall. I've got him 12 at the position. I've got him 18 overall. He is RB 13 for you and your number 16 overall player. I would love to talk to Pianowski about Najee Harris, because he has him at RB 27 overall at number 56, which to me, I mean, obviously Pianowski is never going to land Harris if he thinks he's RB 27 right now. I see a guy who, if he just stays healthy, is definitely getting 300 touches. I mean, Mike Tomlin has said many times over the years that he loves to have a featured workhorse runner. They drafted Najee Harris to be that guy. I totally appreciate that they are in a transition period in Pittsburgh, and the offensive line is not what we've grown accustomed to over the past few years. But I mean, he's going to get 300 to 340 touches this season. I don't see anything standing in the way of that other than injury. So I assume you feel the same way.
So the offensive line is a concern, as is Big Ben, man. He was just looked toast the second half last year. It allowed defenses also to cheat and crowd the line of scrimmage. I mean, you look at that sack total of Big Ben. That's because he called hike and then threw the ball immediately. Having said that, though, as targets or matter for receivers, it's all about the volume for the running backs. And man, if I was talking myself into James Conner in the late second or early third last year, you really got to like Najee Harris in the mid second. I mean, just look at his college resume. He's going to get the receptions and the goal line work. I mean, the setup here is just are immediately 300 plus touches. So that has to be a second round pick in today's landscape. I mean, it just simply has to be, no matter. And this is still a Pittsburgh team with a good infrastructure, obviously a lot of receivers and one of the league's best defenses. So, I mean, maybe Big Ben totally isn't washed. I mean, even if he is washed, I think he's just the volume. He's going to be a top 15 back. If Big Ben isn't washed, then Najee Harris has a chance to be immediately a top 5 fantasy back.
Yeah, that's basically how I feel. Like, again, we've talked about the offensive line. He can be, if you're getting a workload like 300 touches, 320 touches, 330, something like that, you can be inefficient. It's fine, right? Like you can average 3.8, 3.9 yards per carry. It's fine. You're going to run for well over 1,000 yards. You're going to deliver 1,400, 1,500 scrimmage yards on that sort of workload, even if you don't have a good season. Like you can personally have an inefficient season. It's just too much damn work. Like I find it very difficult to project Najee Harris for like, I don't know, 200 carries. I don't know how you get there. Like, I don't know how you look at what Najee Harris's setup is and you don't say, okay, that's 250 or 260 carries. That's what it is. They took him 24 overall. He's going to get a ton of work. He's going to get all that he can handle. I want to also talk, and this is a guy that you mentioned earlier, Trey Sermon. Trey Sermon is actually, and I feel like this is where my dynasty rankings got a little spicy. My rookie dynasty rankings got a little spicy. He's my number two running back. I feel like there is sort of a chalky version of rookie dynasty rankings right now, where ETN has to be the number two running back, and then it's Javonte Williams. We know that Javonte is sort of the heir apparent in Denver. There is not a landing spot of any drafted player that I liked more than Trey Sermon going to San Francisco. I freaking love it. There is no other running back on that roster who is even under contract next year, right? Like, so sure, it's a big mess now. It's Mostert and it's Jeff Wilson, who they love, and they add Wayne Gallman, and Trey Sermon comes into this. None of those guys are under contract, I believe, in 2022. This is the Trey Sermon show next season. He didn't have the career, obviously, that ETN did. He didn't have the career that some of the other marquee running backs did, but his best games were better than anyone's. His performance in the Big Ten championship game, 300 plus rushing yards against Northwestern, was sick. His performance against Clemson was unbelievable. Like his best games, and his just stylistically, he's so perfect for what San Francisco does. I loved everything about it. Really like the player. So I don't know your thoughts on, I mean, I want to let you take a victory lap on Trey Sermon. I'm so happy about the pick.
I'm glad you love him. It's tough to rank the Niners backs in redraft leagues this year, but I've actually settled with Sermon pretty high. I feel like the season's going to open with Raheem Mostert starter, but man, as much as I like him and the upside, the guy has 282 career carries, approaching 30, one of the most injury-prone backs in all of football. So Sermon who dealt with some injuries in his past too, but yeah, there's a lot to like here. Reportedly ready for pass protection, not super fast long speed, but the burst is there. He was Matt Waldman's number one back, and that guy grinds all the college tape. And they just love the situation he's in, man. My Niners' number two run blocking unit, according to PFF last year. They brought back Trent Williams. They signed Alex Mack at center. They drafted guard Aaron Banks. I don't know if you saw him. He's not a tiny human being. Yeah. I mean, Shanahan, people think of the shenanigans in the committee, and I guess that might be a little bit of a problem here and there. But if Mostert goes down, I mean, there's just undrafted Jeff Wilson. Yeah, they did add Elijah Mitchell later, but man, Sermon, they traded up for their running backs coach is in. There's a lot of upside in this system. I understand that Trey Lance, yeah, he played safety in high school. He could take some rushing scores, but Shanahan offense with this run blocking zone scheme, Sermon could be like an RB1 down the stretch for fantasy managers right away in year one.
A couple things occur to me here. Number one, how many teams are going to run the ball more than San Francisco this year? Baltimore, who else, right? Like, they're going to run a lot. So there's going to be plenty of work for Trey Sermon. And number two, as a rankings process question, when it's a situation like Trey Sermon, where your inclination is, okay, he probably doesn't start the season as a guy who's getting more than, you know, 8-10 touches a game. And that's bad. And like, if he spends half his year that way, it's going to affect his year-end numbers. So then you're thinking to yourself, okay, I can only rank that guy so high if I want my rankings to be super accurate, right? But if I really want to help people and I want to give people a difference maker at the end of the season, somebody who is going to, as Cam Akers did last year, like it unequivocally, if you ranked Cam Akers high relative to consensus last year, that helped people because he was a, you know, if not a league winner, he was definitely a player that you were riding late in the season. Wonderful player to have on a roster. That's what Trey Sermon can be, in my view. Like, you might not love September and October, but I feel like once we get into November and December, there's a really good chance that Trey Sermon is great. So then how do you express that in ranks? And I like the way you did it, where you're just like, I'm going to call him my RB23. You're like, I'm just going to, let's just skip ahead to the part where he actually takes over. And I want to express the fact that I think he's going to be a difference maker late in the year.
Yeah, it's probably safer that Melvin Gordon is going to finish with more stats, so it helped me in my accuracy ranking, you know. But I believe that Trey Sermon has a far greater likelihood of winning your league for you than, say, a Melvin Gordon type. So that's again, how my thought process for the rankings.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Okay, a couple other players that I want to hit real quick. You and I are actually kind of a mile apart on J.K. Dobbins. He's number 44 overall for me. He's number 21 overall for you. He's my RB 21. You're RB 15. It should be perfectly clear what my issues are with J.K. Dobbins. Number one, they don't throw to him because they're not going to throw to Gus Edwards. They're not going to throw to J.K. Dobbins. They didn't do it last year. I think there may have been one, maybe in the postseason game they threw it to. I don't know. There might have been one isolated game where he got like four targets or something like that. But for the most part, he's going to get like a target a week and not much more. So there's no reception upside there. He's real good. You know, he also has the rushing attempts from Lamar Jackson to contend with, right? Like Lamar is at this point settling in as a 1,000-yard rusher. So J.K. Dobbins has that to worry about. He's got Gus Edwards to worry about. Like Baltimore loves Gus Edwards. He is going to retain that role. He's going to see carries inside the five. He's going to get his 700 plus rushing yards per year like he has every season he's been in the league. It's a huge rushing pie in Baltimore. I get that. Like nobody's going to run the ball as often as the Ravens do. But Dobbins isn't guaranteed every goal line touch. And he's probably going to catch, like I would legitimately project him for like 14 catches on the season. So talk me into J.K. Dobbins as something more than a low end RB2.
Well, he did have 18 catches in 15 games and a rookie season. He only started one game, but the targets actually dropped in the second half. I definitely hear you there. And it's also tough.
Didn't he have like a 5-week stretch in which he saw two targets? It was something like that.
That sounds right. And it's also tough to repeat the yards per carry that strong. But it's such a system that could, you know, with Lamar Jackson as his quarterback. So this one I won't be too strong about. As you're talking, I moved Clyde Edwards-Helaire one spot above him, so down to my number 16. But the backs I have below him, DeAndre Swift, Miles Sanders, I've went over the warts on them. And your guy, David Montgomery, Chris Carson. I mean, I certainly don't see the arguments for any guys I have right below him. So your guy, David Montgomery, taking over? I mean, because there's a good, a nice juxtaposition there, an all-volume type guy down the stretch. But actually, he passed the eye test, and maybe there are more volume questions with Tariq Cohen and the additions they made. So I hear your criticism with Dobbins, and you're really relying on the touchdowns, but I do think the touchdowns will be there. And this is a guy who had one start last year, so I'm just projecting an increase in volume for him. But I do hear you as far as the concerns as a lack of receiving.
Officially, David Montgomery, for fantasy purposes, not my guy. I don't want to be too closely associated with David Montgomery. I do reserve the right to root for him pretty hard on Sundays because, I mean, he's my Bears running back. I don't think David Montgomery is like, he's a perfect example of somebody who's not a particularly special runner by NFL, really wonderful college player, battled through injuries last year. I have a lot of respect for him. I don't think he's a particularly special runner. We haven't seen it yet in a couple of NFL seasons. And he, again, great year last year. I don't think that workload exists for him in a normal season. Like Tariq Cohen's going to come back. He got hurt really early in the year. He comes back and Matt Nagy loves him like a kitten, loves him like a pet, right? Like he's not going to not give Tariq Cohen his 120 or so touches. Like all that receiving workload that went to David Montgomery as soon as Cohen went down, like that's going to go away. That's going to go right back to Cohen. So I just don't think the receptions are going to be there. He could eke his way over 1,000 rushing yards for the season. I could totally see that. You know, touchdowns are a little bit fluky, so maybe he has maybe gets 8, something like that. For me, that's not going to make David Montgomery much more than like the RB 18 or 19, something like that. So I'm not super bullish on Montgomery, and I actually don't see the path to a huge workload. I see people making the argument that David Montgomery is now a high workload running back, but I think it pulls back a pretty significant amount.
One thing I'll concede with Dobbins as well, I still argue with my RB 16. Maybe it's auto-populated a little too high on my overall, and maybe a wide receiver is a little stronger there as far as a late second round pick or something. Because I hear you, it's thin with the projected volume with him. I really do hear that. I mean, that maybe a mid second round pick is just simply too high for someone who's looking at so few targets.
Yeah, he's one of those super format dependent players too. Obviously, full PPR, he gets dinged a little bit. I want to close this rankings discussion though with what I consider to be your spiciest rank, and I respect this one. I'm almost jealous of it. I have not been able to get there on CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb is your wide receiver 12. You have got to be the high man in the industry on CeeDee Lamb. I would be shocked if you are not. You have a number 35 overall. He is consensus at Yahoo. He's 49 overall. And the rest of us are all almost in lockstep. Like we all have him basically in the same place. Nobody's particularly high or low, except for you who have him you have him as a wide receiver one. So tell me why I should be taking him ahead of Michael Thomas, ahead of Julio Jones, ahead of Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, Chris Godwin, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp. You've got him ahead of all those guys. I like it. I like him with Dak Prescott. I like him as a second year player. I can talk myself into a higher rank on CeeDee Lamb. I just want to hear you do it.
Why is Cooper ranked above him? He just put up the same stats, literally the same amount of touchdowns, a couple fewer yards as a 22-year-old. Cooper has that injury history. Before Dak Prescott got hurt, he was on pace to shatter the passing yards record. So I don't care if there are a few mouths to feed there. That defense is horrible. Ezekiel Elliott may be totally washed. Did you see the touchdown catches CeeDee Lamb was making? He's just going to be a force in the red zone. As a rookie doing that with horrible quarterbacking for the majority of the season. So I will say this is just a gigantic tier between my number 12 all the way down to my number 19. I will say that this is he's the top of a gigantic tier. I could be talked into forming it in any way. But yeah, man, give me CeeDee Lamb. More like TD Lamb, man. He's gonna go off this year. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I actually have no problem conceiving of CeeDee Lamb as a wide receiver one. I feel almost like a coward for not having it myself. Like I feel like this is a rank that back in the day, like Andy Barron's in his prime, probably would have had CeeDee Lamb as a top 12 receiver. And it's just another sign that I'm past my peak as a fantasy ranker. Just not bold enough. But the same cannot be said of you. These are spicy ranks. These are bold ranks. I really respect it. I like where you have CeeDee Lamb. I think I can talk myself into having him at least over Amari Cooper as the Cowboys wide receiver one, if not an overall wide receiver one.
Yeah, Michael Thomas is a guy I'm unsure about. Assuming I'm lower than most now, but I could be talked into going higher. I mean, where are we on him?
I almost want to know who the, I don't know, to some extent, like, do I care who the New Orleans quarterback is? I probably do. That's one of the things that I actually felt best about in the Razzball draft is I did the Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston double dip. Cause I know that I'm going to get like, you know, there's going to be 3 to 5 times during the season when one of those guys pops as my starting quarterback in that league. I kind of like that. But it is just plainly not as good as having anything close to what Drew Brees was. Not even back half of his career, Drew Brees, back third of his career, Drew Brees. We're not going to get that quality of quarterbacking out of either Taysom or Jameis Winston. Jameis might get there on volume. Jameis might get there on his willingness to go deep downfield. But man, it is not the same situation for Michael Thomas. There's no path to 140 catches, 130 catches, right? Like we have definitely seen the best of Michael Thomas and it's not coming back. No fault of his own, really. It has a lot to do with who's not his quarterback. I've got him outside that, you know, I listed my top 7 or 8 wide receivers and he's not in there. You know, he was my number one last year and he's not even close to it this year.
Yeah, he's never been a huge touchdown guy. I have CeeDee Lamb, and I even have the Rams receivers with Stafford ranked slightly ahead of him right now.
Yeah, I can see it, like it. Again, this is just the first iteration of our ranks. I'm sure we'll have plenty of time later in the summer and as we get into the preseason to talk revisiting rankings again. Thank you guys for listening. As always, I am on Twitter at Andy Behrens. That right there is at Dalton Del Don on Twitter. Want to make sure you're following him. If you are looking for college football talk or college sports talk generally, you want to follow the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and our good friend Pat Forty from SI. You guys should also be listening to Post It Up with Chris Haynes for more in-depth conversations from the NBA world. Check us all out on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. Huge thanks to Brett Rader, our producer. That is it. We are out.